This program is a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and is brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.
97 Gold presents Your Money with Fay Bagby. Sound advice to help your money grow. Now, here's Fay Bagby on 97 Gold.
Good morning.
Well, good morning, Faye. How are you?
I'm wonderful. It's a beautiful time of year.
It is a beautiful time of year. I'm starting to see, like, pumpkins coming out, and I'm starting to see, like, fall decorations coming out. I think this week it was the start of fall officially, I think.
Well, let me tell you something. The Bagby Farms certainly has a lot of big pumpkins.
Really?
You know, this was an accidental deal, but we have a lot of pumpkins.
That's right. You accidentally, you thought you were planting squash, right?
That's right. And it turns out it's all pumpkins. And they're coming on, let me tell you.
Well, good.
And we have a great big one growing out there. The little children are so excited.
Really?
Yes. We've got seven or eight already. But the next one looks like it's going to be a great big one.
Wow.
Yes. I keep saying, what are we going to do with all these pumpkins?
You're going to sell them.
You know? pumpkins are very expensive. I remember last year buying them, and now here we're going to have more pumpkins than we know what to do with.
I know it. Well, that's kind of a neat thing. Maybe you'll plant some more next year, and then you won't have to go buy them and save money that way.
That's right. And with us, you never know what's going to come up. We don't know what the little kids, what kind of seeds they put out.
I know it. You may be on the verge of something whole new. You started planting pumpkins on an accident. Next thing you know, you're going to plant a cornfield, and you'll have a corn maze, and you'll have apple cider, and who knows?
You're going too far.
I am. See, I can't just stop.
You're letting this run away with you, but we're not going that far. We're not going there. Oh, my gosh. So, you can imagine what the landscapers say when they come to mow, and they're told, Don't bother this. Don't bother that. And they're looking at that stuff, you know. Oh, no, no, that's pumpkins. You can't bother those. Oh, my gosh. What a deal.
It could be Faye Bagby's Fall Fun Festival. See?
That's right. Well, we may have a festival out here in spite of everything. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and then you've got the llamas, and then you've got the wild turkeys, and then there's all kinds of fun things for people to experience.
Well, that's true. And the turkeys come, the wild turkeys come, they visit a little while, and then they go back out on the road, which is dangerous. And then they have to cross the road to go visit the other people. But there's about seven of them. And they're just so neat. And, of course, they take pictures of them. And the little children want to go out and see them. So it's all interesting.
I know that this probably sounds like it's some kind of a made-up story. But all this is actually true. This is, like, literally what happens.
It is. And then we had the cows that got in with the llamas this week.
Oh.
I had to get them back out of the pasture. Oh, my gosh.
Oh. Interesting times at the Fay Bagby residence.
That's right. And, of course, you know that I want a dog.
Yeah.
And everybody's against this, me getting this dog. And I want a golden doodle.
Ooh, yeah.
But they're $2,800 to $3,800.
Jeez,
this is absolutely asinine for a puppy.
Wow, yeah, it is. Golly.
Yeah. And there's a lot of them. And what I don't understand about breeders is you can't just go out there. You know, I love dogs. I would like to just go out there and look at them.
Yeah.
And maybe pet them. No, no, no. You cannot do that.
Oh no.
If you sign up, you have to put up $500. That's non-refundable. And then you pick something from pictures.
Seriously?
Then you go and you pick them up. That's it.
Really?
I don't think that's the right way to run a railroad.
No, no. Don't you have to, like, spend some time with them to see if they like you, you like them, and see if
you're compatible? Well, heck yeah, that's what I would think.
Wow.
But it's pretty cut and dry. These people are running a tight business.
Wow. We, if you ever get your hands on a golden doodle or labradoodle or anything like that, it's going to be amazing. We found our labradoodle like 14 years ago at the animal shelter, of all places. This is before you know it was all a big craze, and so he was been the smartest and he's the friendliest creature that ever was. He's almost like if he had thumbs, he could like cook supper and clean house and.
Oh yeah, because he's so amazing.
Yeah. So yeah. If you ever end up with one, you're gonna love it. But my gosh, it seems like a little bit of price gouging going on there.
Yeah, and we really need one that's a year old, where he's potty trained and ready to go.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we don't have a lot of time for this potty training.
Yeah.
You know, we just want to love him and have him come and stay. You know, he's got to come prepared. You know. He's got to come ready to hit the road.
Well, for $3,800, they ought to be able to find you one, that could cook and clean and drive you around and go pick up groceries.
Oh yeah, always things. Well, and I've looked at a lot of dogs. Yeah. Nowadays, there's a million designer dogs out there.
Mm.
The Bernese Mountain Dog is a fabulous dog when you read about them. Now they. Don't even let you have them until they're 2 months old and trained every way in the world.
Really?
Yeah, but they don't have a long lifespan.
Oh.
Their lifespan's only 6 to 8 years.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and they're a beautiful, beautiful animal, but they don't have a long life, and I don't know what it is about them.
Wow.
But the people that train them, my gosh, they have like 20 or 30 people that work at their farm, and their vet assistants, and they put them through a rigorous training before you ever get them.
Really? That's amazing.
Oh, they're potty trained. They've got all the commands down, all kinds of things.
Well, that sounds really great.
But I don't know how much they cost. I imagine a fortune.
Yeah, that's true. Any kind of a designer animal is probably through the roof.
It looks like it is. But, you want one that is completely... kid and family friendly.
Oh, yes.
You want one that's just going to love everybody.
Yeah. I think a lot of dogs take their cues from their family. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but I know a lot of dogs that, from what I've seen anyway on TV, that when you have like dogs that fight, they're trained to fight. Otherwise, they're normally, generally, usually docile, even if they look mean and and vicious. A lot of them are actually really, really nice.
Well, we don't want one that would knock them down,
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we don't, and I'm afraid of German Shepherds, so we certainly don't want to go that route.
Oh, yeah, that could be.
I've always been afraid of them because they're just too big, and they, I think they're menacing.
Yeah,
but anyway,
very powerful.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. They're such a powerful dog, we don't need that. We just need a fluffy puppy.
Kind of like something like the llamas, but in dog form.
That's exactly right. I want a curly puppy that's just, kind of like that. And one thing about the golden doodles and labradoodles and all that, they come in different sizes. They've got them now where not just the big one, but they're medium size now.
Yeah.
So, you can get one that weighs 40 pounds
mm-hmm.
rather than the 100-pound one.
Yeah, those 100-pound ones, they're big. They'll come up, like, past your waist sometimes.
That's right. And, little children just need somebody to play with and not somebody that's bigger than they are.
Yeah, you don't want to saddle them up and ride them around the yard.
And then it has to be one that will not bark at llamas.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
Yeah. So you have to get one that's docile, that won't care about the llamas.
Yeah. Of course, the llamas are so nice and friendly. I would imagine probably if you found the right dog, you could take them out there and they'd be friends and run around and probably get in the barn and play with them. And they'd probably be very good friends, I would think.
probably because they're friends to everybody. I mean, you know, a complete stranger, they'll come up to them.
That's true.
And, you know, they like everybody. And they want to be around us. They want to be around. And, you know, the children go down and play in their sand ball.
Yeah.
With the llamas. I mean, it's crazy.
They're like fuzzy people.
They are. And they're just overgrown.
Yeah. To be honest,
you know, they're kind of tall.
Those llamas are probably nicer than half the people we know.
They are. Yeah. They don't get in fights. They don't, you know, say ugly things. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my everybody could just live with a llama for a day, it'd change their life, wouldn't it?
Well, see, now you should write books about this. This is inspiring stuff. Life with a llama in one day.
Well, life around here is interesting every day.
Yeah, it is. Wow. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is
877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330.
And I think last week we didn't give out the website right off the bat. We should probably do that. It's AmericanFinancialMidland.com, and people can, when they go there, they can learn a little bit about some of the investments and some of what people have made and how, like, the life settlements work and things like that. Because people, we know when they think about investing, they think about, you know, the landscape of what's going on right now, the uncertainty, shall we say, of the world.
Pretty uncertain.
I was trying to be nice.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, you know, these things, I mean, the things are, I would imagine, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I would imagine when we're in a really uncertain time, election years are always weird anyway, but the uncertainty of things that are going on right now, I would imagine that people are probably pretty nervous about investing in general. And so I would imagine that people are probably coming to you and saying, Faye, look, you know, even if nothing has happened yet, or even if, you know, we've been okay so far, we know that this year, over the next, you know, several months, and who knows how long it'll last, things are a little unstable. Are people in that place? Are they coming to you saying, geez, we don't know what to do. We're looking for a better alternative.
Well, I had lots of calls this week, had people coming in wanting to get their money out of the market. When the market fell the first of the week, mm-hmm. I mean, it scared people pretty bad this time.
Yeah.
You know, because it dropped so fast so far. And people said, you know, we've got a 401k. We would like to move that. We would like to do this. And they, some of them were qualified and some were not. Some were having to talk to them about annuities because they didn't qualify, but they wanted to get their money out anyway. And then we had the people who are qualified. You know, I got calls from Arizona this week, people that used to live in Midland that were wanting to move their money out.
Really? Is there a sense of urgency?
Yeah. There was a sense of urgency. They said, you know, they'd lost, I think they lost 50 or 60,000, you know, that one morning.
Yeah, just in one day.
So, yeah, in one day. So people were saying, you know, I think we've waited a little bit long. You know, we're going to go through all this again. Get us out of this mess.
How long does it take for somebody to convert? Say they're all in the stock market and they say, okay, I want either all out of the stocks, or maybe they just want to diversify a little bit, move a little bit over and try a life settlement. Where are people in that general span? Are they all
in? It takes 2 weeks. If it's an IRA or 401, it's going to take at least 2 weeks to get it transferred over.
Okay, so it's a fairly quick process. We're not like 6 months and set up.
No. It's not a long time at all.
Okay. All right.
But it's going to take at least 2 weeks and then another week probably to get you everything done. So you're looking at 2 to 3 weeks. Now then, this week we had 3 maturities.
In 1 week? Really?
In 1 week we had 3.
Big ones?
No, mid-size.
Cool.
Yeah, it wasn't $1 million or $2 million one. We had one that there was only one person in, and the others, they were both breast cancer.
Really?
One came in early, one was a little bit late. I think it was 3 or 4 months late. But they were both breast cancer. The lady was, both of them were like in their 50s. And what is so amazing, on two of them, somebody had called this week asking about them.
Really?
And then the then the next day, we got notice of the maturities.
So they just happened to call right before they...
they just happened to call. And we had just, on two of them, we had just sent for new LEs, and one of them gave the person like, 4 years or 5 years on each of them, and they passed away immediately.
Wow. Why so long? Why the gap?
I don't know. Sometimes they don't look as sick as they really are. But with breast cancer, as you and I know, the survival rate is not good when they do alternative medicine. It happens to us all the time. We buy them, and if I see it's alternative medicine, I'm going to bid it immediately.
Yeah.
Because I know you can't survive with alternative medicine.
I think a lot of people try a lot of things out of desperation, especially now when people are not able to get in for cancer treatments like they normally would because of the coronavirus. Are you finding that more and more people are seeking alternative treatments?
Usually it's just breast cancer. Most people do not go out of the country to Mexico seeking treatment. Just women. Mm.
Because I'm wondering, because I know that we've kind of talked about this a little bit, over the last several months about how, people are not able to go to the hospital for chemo and radiation and normal standard treatments. And so that might have an effect on the maturity rate. And it kind of seems like some of those things are starting to play out in some cases. Is that what you're finding?
Well, we don't know yet. I don't want to say for sure yet that, that these three did not get treatment. I don't know. But they had told us, 21st Services, who does all these statistics for us, they said we were going to have 12% higher maturities this year than before. And so I don't know how. We've just got several months to go, so I don't know.
Yeah, it's too early to run
early to run the test on it yet.
Wow. Well, I wonder what this is going to do for investing going into the new year over the next several months. What do you see? What are you hearing, or if anything? I mean, maybe people just don't know because it is so uncertain. What are you hearing for projections over the next several months? Anything? Is there any buzz either way?
No. What I'm finding is it's taking longer for us to close the cases to buy them. And I think that has something to do with the virus. I think they're afraid to get out of their houses because they are ill, because they do have cancer. They're not coming out. And so we're having a little bit of trouble getting them signed up. They're saying we want to sign the contract, we want to do this, but it's taking a little bit longer.
Yeah.
We would get our contracts back in a couple of weeks. It's taking longer than that right now to get the contracts.
What's the landscape for life settlement types of investments? Are people, are they in that place where, because I know normally, during regular times, pre-COVID, people would go through these phases where it's like, I've lost a lot maybe we lost, 50,000, 60,000 or whatever the case is. And we're just kind of tired of it. It's a little bit less... I guess urgent. And so now with things that are happening, are you finding that more and more people are saying, look, this is, we've either lost a lot and we've had all we can take, or are they nervous ahead of those losses looking for alternatives? Where are people generally coming from?
Well, I think when they get nervous, that's when they decide to move their money. If you get nervous enough and you're 60 years old, or older, you're really thinking about, about your money, about having enough to retire. The people I talked to this week said, we don't have $250,000, toward our retirement. They said, we don't have enough. We started late. Mm. So they can't afford to lose that $250,000. That's all they've got.
Yeah.
Toward retirement. So, people are really thinking about that right now. How much do we have? What is the risk factor, in losing some of it? They need every dime of it. They do not want to lose it.
I would imagine probably as they get closer to retirement, looking at that 250, they were probably thinking, gosh, we thought we would be a little bit further along than we are. And there's a very realistic chance that that could get wiped out, literally like what happened earlier this week. It could be wiped out before lunch. And then there's either A, no retirement, or if you're already crossed that line, you may end up having to go to work. That's a very realistic possibility, isn't it?
Yes, and it's one that most people do not relish. You know, nobody wants to get up to 67 years old, getting ready to retire, and have to go back to work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've worked all your life, you're ready to retire. And then, you know, unforeseen things in the stock market could make you have to go back to work or not retire at all.
Yeah.
And neither one's a good option.
No, especially when, yeah, I mean, most people look forward to retirement because, you know, I mean, obviously people love the opportunity of, hey, I'm going to retire. I mean, it just sounds great. But then the other thing is, you know, there's travel involved. There's, you know, doing all the things that they want to do. There's, you know, going out and like you say, sometimes people will go buy a ranch. You know, they get to quote unquote do some work, but it's more of a fun type of a project. It's not the pressure of going to work every day and meetings and reports or, you know, whatever the case is. And so there's a lot of things that go along with retirement that a lot of people don't even think about or consider. And so are you finding that people are starting to think, well, instead of going into retirement, looking forward to all these fun things, it's just we just kind of want to get there and kind of make it. Is it more of a like a survivalist type of
No, outlook? I think everybody still has high hopes. They have high hopes they're going to be able to retire and do everything that's on their list. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them cannot. They're not going to be able to do that. But the ones that can, you know, are going to retire happy, and they're going to do, you know, everything that they've ever dreamed of. But the ones that've got a smaller amount of money are going to be able to retire, but not as happy as everybody else. In other words, they're going to have to be careful with what they've got.
So when you talk to these new people, I think, you know, even recently this week or even in the last several weeks, when people are in those positions and they say, Faye, we've only got 250 and we're coming up on retirement. In this particular case, you know, without getting into any, you know, personal information or specifics, what age range were they in? You know,
these are all people in their 60s.
So they're like right there on the
yeah,
edge.
Yeah, these are people that could retire if their company goes ahead and gives them early retirement. And I talked to some people this week. Their companies are going to sell. Their companies are fixing to sell out, so they're not going to have a job.
You know, it seems like there's a lot of that that people may be facing. You know, companies, you know, being bought and sold. What do you recommend to people that are in those positions? You know, say they're really a few years away or a few months away from what they would like to, you know, retire, and you know they're facing all of a sudden a complete turnaround in this situation. What do you recommend for stuff like that?
Well, you know, if they want to make a change, now's a good time to do it. You know, if your company's fixing sale, they're not going to keep that 401k. A lot of the new companies are telling the people, we're not keeping your 401k. You will have to move it. So now would be a good time to move the 401k, get it into more stable, and know what you're going to make. You've got to plan for the future. You've got to say, you know, what's best for my family? Not what's best for the broker, you know. I know I've had some people that the broker said, oh, you don't want to do that. But it's not the broker's money.
Mm-hmm. They don't
if
really...
you lose, the broker goes right on down the road. He hadn't lost a dime.
They have no vested interest whatsoever.
He has no interest other than the commission he's going to make by keeping you there.
Yeah.
And if you lose, all they say is, I'm sorry. They don't guarantee that. It's not their responsibility. If you lose money, they have no liability.
No dog in that hunt whatsoever.
Nope, none whatsoever. They're just there to make that commission every day.
So for these people that, you know, were in their 60s and they're looking at this and they're saying, geez, Faye, we got 250. How in the world are we ever going to get out of the stock market and start over to go ahead and be ready for retirement? Is that too late? Is the window?
No, but they better get on it. Let me tell you, if you've only got $250,000, how long do you think that would last?
A year, maybe two.
two and a half, three years. All right. That's all.
It's not long.
And so, you know, unless you're going to take $20,000 a year to live on, you can't do that.
No, that's you don't want to go on the ramen noodle retirement plan. That's not a good
way to
go. No,
you don't want to go on that. It's not a good plan. So people need to keep investing and do it, as I think, in my personal opinion, as conservative as possible. And the policies, one thing about it, you know what you're going to make going in. You know, if it's 12 months, you're going to make 12%. If it's 24 months, you're going to make 24%. And you can roll that and keep rolling it and make some money and make enough, you know, that you can retire and that you can take money out every year. But you have to get started. You can't just procrastinate forever, you know, and just talk about it.
So people are looking at the stock market, looking for other opportunities. What makes the life settlement, what makes investing in a life insurance policy such a great investment for people, especially as they get closer to retirement age? What makes it so great?
Because if you've got several policies, you've got something maturing all the time. You know, that's what I love. These policies that came due this week, I looked to see who was in them, and it's all the people that invest regularly, all the time. And you know, I don't know how many they've had mature this year, but I know they've already had several in front of this. So when I looked at it, I said, yep, they're doing it right. This is another maturity for them this year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we had had, what did I tell you the other day? Did I tell you we were at 14 million, wasn't it, for
yeah.
the year?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so now we're way over $14 million, and we're in the middle of the year.
Wow, that's incredible. And we've still got a whole quarter left. You know, we have October,
yes.
November, December,
uh-huh.
the rest of September.
So we've got 3 months left, and I think we will have quite a few more maturities, you know, in the next 3 months. Also, we've got great policies coming on board. We're bidding on some great ones. We're bidding on pancreatic cancer again. And, you know, we love pancreatic cancer. Our clients love it. And we're going to try to pull it off. You know, we're looking at two really good pancreatic cancer policies and a couple of breast cancers. But what amazes me is every once in a while, like this week, we had people going in a policy. This one guy said, no, I don't think I'll go in a policy this week. And then the next day he had maturity. I thought how funny that really was.
Did that change his tune a little bit? Did he say, oh, okay, I'll go by?
I don't know. I didn't even talk to him about it. I just thought how funny it was. I said, you know, that's the way it works.
Of course it is.
But you have to be consistent. The numbers will work if you're consistent. If you invest all the time, your policies are going to mature. That's all there is to it.
So
it works. You're going to have enough money to retire on and live happily ever after.
An example, you know, using these people that we were talking about earlier, say somebody is in their 60s. They've got $250,000. How do you recommend they proceed? A couple of big policies, maybe one big?
No. I would do as many as I could.
So diversify.
If I only had $250,000, I would have at least four policies.
Okay.
You're going to need it. You don't want just one. You want several.
And how much, what would that would it be like 50 in each?
Yeah, that's what I would do. I would do 50 in each or 60.
So that
because that'll give you good returns, and they're small, and you should be able to turn that over several times.
So if somebody says, well, geez, if you know, they're good policies, but they're small, I need a big home run here to get me there. Is that the right way to look at it, or is it no?
If you've just got one policy, and if it goes over, it's not going to turn that money as quick as you need it.
Hmm.
But if you've got several, you're going to have several chances for maturities.
I see.
So you can turn the money faster that way.
So if somebody's in just one policy, just for example, they're all their eggs in that one basket, that's got to mature. Whereas if they're in four, you know, one may go maybe full term, maybe even a little bit over, while another one or two may come in early. And so there's more opportunities. Hey, here's a payoff. Let's reinvest. And then you start leapfrogging, and that's how you stair step up. Is that the right approach? Is that the plan?
That's the right approach. Because especially if you've only got $250,000 to your name, it's best to do small investments and keep it churning, where that you can get to your goals faster.
What if somebody's in a hurry? What if they say, "Geez, Faye, I'm 62 and I want to retire in a year, or no, let's go ahead in 2 years, 3 years. Let's just say 3 years. Say I'm 62, I want to retire in 3 years. I got to make something happen." Is that same plan still applicable to that time frame, or is the window too narrow?
No, if you're going to retire in 3 years, and it depends how much they've got. If they've got more money, it's going to be a lot easier to get to their goals. You know, we got to figure out how much they're going to have in retirement. They should have already been thinking about that. They should have been saying from 60 on, at least. At 60, they had at least 6 or 7 years, you know, to really get this down. If they're late, they need to really work harder, you know, to get to their goals.
So 60 is really kind of that reevaluation line.
Yeah, you've got to figure it out at 60 and say, okay, I'm going to retire in 5 years, I'm going to retire in 3 years, whatever it is. Do we have enough that I can have $100,000 a year? Am I going to have to take $50,000 a year? It's going to be tough on 50 for anybody in this day and time. So you just got to figure out, you know, how much you're going to need to do this.
What if people think that they were okay, they were on a plan, and then something in the last year or 2 years has happened that they weren't counting on, something that they didn't expect, and then all of a sudden things were wiped out, and they thought they were planning well, you know, investing well, you know, doing as conservative investments as possible on in stocks and things like that. But then something happened, and then I don't want to say it's not their fault, but, you know, something unforeseen set that plan back. Do you find people in those positions?
Every once in a while. Now, the best ones are the ones that their home's paid for, their cars are paid for, they have no debt. If they have no debt, they can invest a lot more. They can ratchet up, you know, buy more policies and get to their goal, you know, in 5 years or 7 years.
So,
but a lot of people have always invested. It may not be in the stock market. It may just be CDs. Well, if you're a CD holder, you haven't made enough money in the last 4 years to even spend it at the five and dime.
Yeah, there's just no payoff.
So, yeah, there's no payoff there. If you're in bonds, there's no payoff there right now. Bonds are a loser. Mm. They may be safe, but they're not going to make you enough money to retire on.
Is there really anything aside from life settlements that is doing well at all? Generally
speaking? Well, I don't know right now because, you know, there's so many businesses closing. You know, Three Forks, and I don't know if you're familiar with Three Forks in Dallas. It's an institution as far as restaurants. Been in business 25 years.
Mm.
They could not pay the lease on that huge 25,000 square foot building, and they've moved to Frisco.
Really?
What? I want to know, how is it all these huge companies did not have enough money to weather the storm? You've been in business 25 years. Where's the money?
I know it seems like almost weekly, you know, you have another list of, you know, long-term institutions that have gone under. I know Brooks and Brothers. I know, you know, like Pier One. I know we've talked about all these, you know, big established companies that are filing for bankruptcy. Should people be worried about more to come?
There will be more to come. Morton Steakhouse in Chicago is closing.
Mm. Oh, man.
They are an institution in Chicago.
Yeah.
But what I'm trying to figure out, how did management mismanage these millions and millions of dollars where that they had no backup?
Yeah.
Neiman Marcus had no backup. I just can't believe this because these are people that were making $1 jillion.
Yeah.
You know, they had money in every pocket. They had all these CEOs. Did they give them all the money at the end and they walked away with it? What happened?
That's a good question. What do you think happened? Did they just write big checks and close?
If you're in business and you're making millions of dollars and then you're not making any money for 3 months and it can put you out of business in 3 months?
It sounds like...
See, I don't know where all the money went. I'm trying to figure it out.
Margins sound really, really close. A lot closer than they ever should have been.
Well, and Lord & Taylor in Chicago.
Yeah.
They've been in business 200 years.
Man. Gone.
So I'm trying to figure out who got the money. Somebody got the money.
Do you think there'll be any kind of investigation, or do you think it's just, well, it is what it is, we're closed, and that's just the end?
Well, it depends how many stockholders they had. If they were all public companies, they could call for an investigation. I don't know that they would, but they should. I mean, if you're a public company, and this is stockholders' money you're playing with, and in 3 months you're broke, who got the money?
Wow.
So, you know, I'm just trying to figure out, if you're investing in public companies, you know, and they're going under, the stock is worthless, of course.
So this is some questions that stockholders and people who are investing or are still in Wall Street, these are questions that people should be asking, right?
Well, I would certainly want to know if I'm not in the stock market, but if I was in the stock market, I'd be looking at those stocks pretty hard and saying, well, you know, if this old company goes under, I lose my investment.
Mm-hmm. All of it gone.
And there is nobody backing you up. This is what I don't understand. Nobody's responsible. Nobody cares. If you lose, they don't say, well, I'm sorry you don't, you're not going to be able to retire because I sold you all these stocks that are worthless, you know. Now, if I did good for you, that's great. I'm just saying there's no responsibility.
No responsibility, no accountability,
nope.
No safety net, no,
no.
You're just out there.
There is no safety net. I think that puts it pretty good. You're just there. If you've got a 401k, whoever's managing it, if they do a good job, great. If they do a bad job, there's not anything you can do.
It sounds like a very serious situation that people should be concerned about.
I would if I was in the stock market. I told you what happened to me years ago, and I won't name the brokerage house. They talked me into putting some money with them. And in 3 months, I had lost $60,000 for real.
Oh, my God.
It wasn't coming back.
Oh, man. That's a hard lesson.
Yeah. And I called them over and said, what in the heck did you do? Well, we did this. We did that. In other words, tough.
Wow.
The money's gone. It's not coming back.
That's.
And I got out of the stock market and never went back. I figured if they could lose $60,000 and tell me, you know, tough luck, then I certainly didn't need to be involved.
Is it fair to say that was, say, maybe your wake-up call or an
eye-opener? It was a wake-up call. Don't do it. Don't get involved.
All right.
You know, they just say sorry. Tough luck.
So I know there's a lot of grimness. I know there's a lot of dimness that we've kind of gone through. Some reasons for concern. But I didn't mean to paint such a horrible, grim picture. But it's the reality. It's what's actually happening. And people have to start looking at these things as a very real possibility. But there is light at the end of the tunnel. So we'll get into some of the wonderful things on the other side of the fence that are the benefits of life settlements and things like that in just a few minutes. But for now, this is your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330.
Your website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com. People can get all kinds of information there, read testimonials, people who are in the program, find out a little bit more about how it works and all kinds of other interesting things. And every Saturday morning around this time, we get into trivia. So what is our topic this morning?
Marshall's Pottery. The Mark Marshall Pottery in Marshall, Texas.
Cool.
I mean, this company started in 1895.
And they're still in business, by the way. we should mention that. We're talking about a lot of companies who are no longer here. This is still active, right?
That's right. Most of the Texas companies are run right.
Yes.
Okay?
Amen.
Marshall Pottery, W.F. Rockery came from Kentucky, came to East Texas. He was attracted to Marshall because they have white clay and they have water. And then in 1905, it fell into the hands of Sam Ellis. And Mr. Ellis was a blacksmith. And he'd walk by the pottery place every day on his way to and from work. And he ended up loaning the owner $375 to build a new kiln. Not long after that, Mr. Ellis went by and he found a note under a rock. And it said, "I have this day sold to S.H. Ellis the Marshall Pottery Works, consisting of tools, clay, manufacturing ware, one wagon, and two mules." And he put his family to work. A fire in 1912 almost destroyed the whole thing.
Oh, no.
And he had to go borrow money for the first time. And he borrowed $2,000 to rebuild. And he had canning jars, crocks, syrup jars. And these were all delivered by mule and wagon until 1913. And they bought the first Marshall pottery truck. Then the invention of the metal syrup bucket came along. And then the glass canning jar in the 1920s. And that nearly ruined him.
Really?
And yeah, interesting enough, the coming of Prohibition saved him.
Really?
And, yeah, and if it hadn't been for the sale of the jugs for moonshine, he said they would have went under.
Wow.
The sale of jugs for moonshine. Can you imagine?
Wow. And illegal jugs, no doubt.
Yeah. And so then the discovery of a lower firing clay in the 1940s, that is what made history. They started producing the second product, flower pots.
Ooh.
They're still producing today, but they've modernized, updated, new process, and new technology. But the Mark Marshall Pottery Company became famous at the end of the 90s. And here they are. They started, as you know, with $200 or $300. And the Derma Group in 1997 came in and purchased them. And they are a worldwide manufacturer of terracotta pottery.
Mm-hmm.
And now they are a worldwide company, and they produce 100,000 pots a day.
A day? What?
A day.
Wow. Wow, I didn't...
Now, can you imagine if you had been in Marshall, Texas at the right time in the 1800s, what you could have been today?
Yeah, really.
And now it's all wholesale. They don't sell to the public anymore like they used to. But it's a worldwide company now, 100,000 of those pots a day.
That is amazing. And it's also kind of funny to hear, you know, the first sale was written on a note under a rock, and he listed his assets of like a mule and a wagon.
That's right. One wagon, two mules. I loved it. And the guy just went out of business, and I just sold him the business for nothing.
Wow.
But see, this is the story of one of our old, old companies that flourished, that started early, and never went under.
And it also sounds like it's another Texas company that found new ways of doing things a little bit, taking something that maybe existed, coming up with new innovations, and really modernizing it, changing it a little bit, make it more efficient, make the quality a little bit better. That's what it kind of sounds like. Am I reading this the right way?
That's right. And, of course, it was family-owned until 1997.
Wow.
Look how many years that is.
Yeah.
And, of course, Mr. Ellis owned it from 1905 and all that time. And it was all family-owned till 1997, and they finally sold, you know. But it's just so much history there for Marshall, Texas, having this company there and what all they did.
That's amazing.
And they became famous.
I bet the second sale in the 90s was not that when they listed their assets, it wasn't on a note under a rock, and it did not include a mule, I'm sure.
It did not include a mule, and it was big then, and now it is huge.
Yeah. All wholesale, you say, right?
Oh, yeah. It's too big to be selling your pots out of the back.
I got a guy in a van down by the river selling pots.
Yeah, I mean, you know. But it became famous in the 90s, and when it became so famous, this huge company came in and bought them. But it just goes to show how Texans start something, they stick with it, they can make a success of nothing, you know, of $375. I mean, can you even imagine that in 1905?
I know it. And to what it's become now, it's just, it's almost too much to even fathom. And it's little steps along the way, you know, these little improvements, these little things, you know, especially, you know, when Prohibition and the whole, you know, the jugs thing, when that kind of morphed into something else, you know, these weird coincidences, these weird seemingly could be devastating situations happen, and then they morph, and then they change, and then they apply it to other things, and it's just neat how you know they just don't give up and just keep going.
They don't give up, and they're smart.
Yeah,
and they can take almost nothing and make something of it. There's so many businesses in Texas that are successful, and when I look at these public companies and all these big companies that don't even have any money for 3 months, I can't fathom it. You know?
Yeah, I know it. It's weird. You know, you think, geez, you know, they should have all these reserves someplace. But no. But then you look at something like this that started so small, $375, and now it's a huge monster.
And it's like, you know, an insurance company, they have to have reserves. A retailer apparently does not have to have reserves, even though it's a public company. They don't have to have any reserves put back. In other words, they can take every dime and spend it and walk away and say, oh, we're broke.
I would have thought there would have been some kind of regulations in place. I don't know, but it just seems like
I don't know either.
Been.
I mean, I don't understand it. How each one of them has declared bankruptcy and say, you know, we've been in business all these years, but we don't even have the cash to sustain us for 6 months or 3 months.
Yeah. Top execs get their big bonus. They close the door, and everybody else is just on their own.
Yeah, and like Three Forks. Three Forks was 25,000 feet. I mean, every time I ever went there in the last few years, it was back-to-back people. If you went at Thanksgiving or Christmas, I mean, the lobby was full. I mean, the money, I know they made a huge amount of money, but where'd it go?
Yeah.
They could not pay the rent on the building.
Wow.
And I thought they owned the building. It was so beautiful.
Yeah.
But they didn't even own the building.
Yeah, there may be some red flags there, the fact that they didn't own it, the fact that they were still, you know, leasing.
After 25 years?
Yeah, you would think, you know, hey, we should probably, you know, increase our assets. Let's take this, reinvest in property. But apparently not. Maybe we're looking at it weird.
Maybe we don't understand. And I haven't looked at, you know, I don't own any stocks. So I haven't looked at any of these companies, what they put out to the public, you know, before all this happened. How much cash did they show on their balance sheet?
Yeah. Good question.
I don't believe it's there.
Yeah,
it can't be there because we're closing the doors for good.
You know, it seems like there's a lot of companies, large corporations that are investing in. They're very top heavy. It seems like they're investing in their own people. You know, at executive offices. You know, office remodels. You know, bonuses. You know, ridiculous salaries that are so out of proportion with not only maybe revenue but also, you know, the rest of the expenses that they've got going on. It seems like there's a lot of that these days.
Maybe they're just so top-heavy they gave all the executives all the money.
That's what I'm thinking, yeah.
Yeah, they could have. I just can't figure out how you don't even have cash for 3 months. I mean, that doesn't make sense to me.
I know it. But then again,
these are companies.
If you're an executive who decides, hey, I'm going to take all the money, well, you know, you're the guy that decides. You know.
And so they wanted to give them all these bonuses as they went out the door.
Yeah.
We need to give you all this bonus money. We can't pay the stockholders, but we'll give you the money.
Yeah, stockholders are out of luck. Employees are out of luck. there's a small handful of people that are walking away very well off, and everybody else is just kind of like out there.
Everybody else is just, you know, it's gone. I guess that's what they tell them.
Yeah, I guess. Regardless, I don't know how we got off on that, but that's a very interesting story with another Texas company. I love when you highlight, you know, companies that started here in Texas, and they have just flourished and adapted and come up with new ways of doing things. It shows some of the great innovation that comes out of the state. It's amazing. It's very inspiring.
And look what it does for our economy. Oh, every time you have a successful Texas company, they operate in Texas. They have employees in Texas. You know, it's a Texas-type deal.
Yeah, yeah. It's a whole different dynamic with companies that start here than most, from what it seems like, in other places. And I think there's a whole lot more of, I don't want to say conservative approaches, but, you know, maybe more realistic, more long-term sustainment plans that they have in place, other than just, you know, the quick buck and get in and out. It's just like, hey, we're going to, you know, keep going regardless of what happens. And they've got enough reserves. They've got enough, you know, manpower. They have enough of the right people in place to zig when they need to zig and zag when they need to zag.
And they're not top heavy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true, too.
So anyway, on our deal, you know, the people are going into a life insurance policy. You know, they know that the people are ill. They know they have cancer. They know that it's a short-term policy. You know, it's maybe 30 months, 36 months, whatever it is. Maybe it's 24. They know at that length of time, you know, that their money is safe. They're going to get their principal back. They're going to get their interest back. And it's not going to go up and down. We're not going to ask them to take a discount. We're not going to say, oh, you know, we'd rather pay you 4%.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, they have a contract for a certain amount, and that's what they're going to get.
And it doesn't matter what happens with the economy. It doesn't matter what happens with the stock market. It doesn't matter, you know, if more businesses go under and file bankruptcy. People in a life insurance policy are going to hold steady because it's its own separate entity. It has nothing to do with really anything else. It's not affected because, after all, as you say, it's a life insurance policy, and it's going to pay.
It's going to pay off. You know that this person has cancer. You've got a life expectancy report that gives you a when pass away. They could be wrong, or they could be spot on, or they could pass away earlier. And this happens all the time, you know. And but we know that they are going to pass away. It's a matter of timing. And you know that you're going to get paid better, I think, personally, than you would in most other fields. Mm-hmm. You know, if you can make 1% a month, that's pretty good money.
We know the situation right now. We understand that, you know, if anything happens, like we've seen several times, really in the last several years, that things can change literally in a heartbeat. We know what can happen if there's any kind of a turbulent bump, you know, that could affect the stock market. We've seen people go down, you know, without any kind of warning. There's not like there's a magic elf that comes out and says, "Hey, we're gonna tank all these stocks before lunch. Do something." None of that happens. So we see a lot of times where people all of a sudden get caught off guard. With a life insurance policy, they don't have to worry about any of that. Do you find that is probably is that the greatest benefit of being involved in a life insurance policy?
I think it is, because you don't have to worry about it going up or down or losing any money. You know how much you're going to get paid. So, you know, I think that it's solid. You know, it's conservative. It's solid. You know where you stand at all times.
So how does the process work? Because most people, they're familiar with the stock market. You know, you go see your broker and that whole thing happens. How does it work when somebody comes to see you for the first time? What happens? What's the first couple of steps?
Well, the first thing is making sure this is right for them, that they want to do it. Then we figure out if they're bringing us an IRA, if it's a joint account with their wife, and then we tell them how it works. You know, we buy life insurance policies on people that have stage 4, stage 3 cancer. Some cancers are only stage 3. And then once we buy it, we give them the opportunity to invest in that policy. We send them an email. We tell them, here's a policy we'd like for you to invest in. Look at it, make a decision. If you want to do it, email us back. We want it in writing that you want to put your money in it. Then we put everybody's money in that policy. We close it. It goes to the bank. Nevada Trust handles it. They are the trustee on every account. The money always has to go to the bank at Nevada Trust. So once their money is at the bank, then the bank takes over for us. They make sure the premiums are paid because we've already escrowed the money for premiums. And then when the person passes away, again, the bank steps in as trustee. They get the certified death certificate over to the insurance company. The insurance company writes the check to the bank. Then the bank puts it in everybody's account. So, you know, it's pretty streamlined. It's a safety net there. So, you know, I love the way it works.
The reserves are there, so when the policy does mature, people don't have to worry about there's not going to be any money to pay it. So, you know, like all these other companies we talk about, you know, when they have no reserves left and it just kind of closes and that's it, completely the opposite with a life insurance company because they've got all these reserves, right?
That's right, and they are regulated. I mean, they are regulated up the hill. It's the most regulated business in America is the life insurance companies. They are so regulated. They have to account for every dime. They have to make sure they have reserves to pay every policy if they all came due tomorrow, which they wouldn't. But whatever one's come due, they always have the money to pay. So we know we're in a conservative business, that it's just a life insurance policy. Everybody has life insurance. So people understand the theory of a life insurance policy. I've only had two people that could not get this, could not figure it out. And they're way out in the country, and they they could not get it. I sent them every bit of information 3 times. They couldn't get it.
Maybe the fourth is
they
a charm.
Just, I don't know. I haven't talked to them in a while. The last time I just said, if they don't get this, I give up. Oh, my gosh.
So as solid as this is, as great of an investment opportunity as a life settlement is, it does come with some risks. There are 3 big ones. What's the biggest?
That's right. Everything has risk. If people tell you nothing has a risk, they're wrong. The biggest risk is it can go over. If it goes over, you're not going to get paid on time. You're going to get paid in arrears. You're going to get paid instead of this year, it may be next year or the year after. So you always have to be prepared that some of these will go over. But then some of them are going to come in early. Some of them are going to be on time. So your biggest risk is, can you stand it if it's late? Mm-hmm. If you can't, you don't need to be in this anyway. So, you know, we have people that they have policies maturing about every quarter. And then they may have some they're not going to mature for 2 years. We don't know.
Okay.
But the investment is still safe. It hasn't gone anywhere. It's just late.
All right. No problem. And the, really, when it comes down to it, that's not a big concern for investors, for most investors anyway, because they have to be accredited to do the program anyway. So
that's right. You must be accredited. Let me stop and tell you. Accreditation means you must make $200,000 a year or you have to be worth $1 million without your home.
Okay. So there's plenty of reserves usually where people are coming from to even start.
That's right. These people can afford it to go over. It's not like it's their last dime and they need the money tomorrow.
Yeah. Okay. What's the second biggest risk?
The second biggest risk is, remember, you can't spend the cash because it is invested.
Okay.
I don't think there's anybody that misses that one. I think they all get that.
Yeah. Not a big deal.
The third one is if a life insurance company should ever go under. And we've never had one go over in Texas. They've always paid their claims. And nationwide, we haven't had a life insurance company go under in years because if somebody gets in trouble, somebody will buy it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the premium income is everything in a life insurance company.
Yeah. There's just too much. And there's so many policies that just get abandoned. All that means is that when somebody pays, you know, for several years on a policy and then they just cancel it or stop paying or whatever, that's just extra money in the bank that that they're not ever going to have to pay out. It's just literally free cash at that point.
That's right.
I shouldn't say free cash, but you know what I mean.
Yes. So, you know, the investment is in a life insurance policy. That's all. It's that simple. We're buying insurance policies on people who have cancer and who need the cash right now. So we're cashing them out. They're out. And then our people become the owners of the policy.
Yeah, and we're talking about stage four cancer, so we know that, you know, historically the numbers are there that show that, you know, we know how these policies mature relatively quickly. And so the numbers are there so people can take comfort in knowing that, you know, their policy does have a fairly quick return if people are ever concerned about that, which I think from what it sounds like most people aren't. So what about availability for appointments and policies and things like that?
We want to be talking to people this week. We are going to be busy this week, so they need to call, make an appointment, talk to me, and we'll get something done for them.
Sweet. So one last time, Faye, what is your phone number?
877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330.
You've been listening to Your Money with Faye Bagby, sound advice to help your money grow. Listen for Your Money with Faye Bagby every Saturday morning at 10 here on 97 Gold.
This program has been a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and has been brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.